the podcast with everything paranormal. It's the 222 Paranormal Podcast, starring your host, Joe, Dean, and Jennifer Ann.
Hello.
What's up, brother?
Nothing.
So, Joe.
Yeah.
Have you had anything haunted happen to you lately?
No.
Okay, me neither.
Well, I know last week you'd mentioned about your neighbor met your old neighbor.
Yeah, so lots of haunted activity.
Yeah, but nothing
in the mean streets of West Toledo. Yeah.
Nothing since then?
No, nothing too exciting. Of course, I've been so busy, you know, I've barely been home. Traveling, working, trying to run these businesses, trying to get our side hustle going. But anyways, Joe, got a story for you.
Cornhole madness going on
here. Ooh, your coffin-shaped cornholes are very popular this summer.
They are.
So if you guys want some, you know where to get them.
Yeah.
You better email Jobo. That's your new name, Jobo.
Oh, no.
Bobo and Jobo.
No.
The Bigfoot twin brothers. All right, I got a good one for you.
What? A story?
I got a story.
Oh, we haven't had a story in a long time.
Okay, so it kind of ties into our show.
All right.
Along the theme. I'm so excited because we have a super, super, super guest star.
Superstar.
Superstar. You guys have been waiting for this one. We've been hyping it all week. Okay, so Skinny Necklace Bigfoot shows up in Florida.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm not talking the jewelry. I'm talking no neck.
No neck.
All right. Lakeland County, Florida. Central Florida woman says she saw a hairy bipedal creature she believed was Bigfoot. The woman reports that she was driving south, not far from the Green Swamp, when she saw Bigfoot with no neck. I don't know why I'm whispering. It was a bright Saturday morning around 10 a.m. and this tall creature stepped onto the road. It crossed the lane where I was driving in two steps and was into the left lane, and my view of it was then obstructed, she says. About September 2015 encounter reported to the BFRO, which is the Bigfoot Research Organization. It just went straight across the road. The eyewitness says the very thin creature was about 6 foot tall and covered in thick gray hair. The head exhibited reddish hair. The hair came all the way down to the pavement. I couldn't see any feet. The head did not bob up and down as it walked, she said, explaining there wasn't a neck. She goes on to say that she was unable to spot any facial features except the spiky hair stood above the pointy head. The woman claims to know the local wildlife and that she's never seen anything like it. Also known as the swamp ape, the Florida Bigfoot, the Mayak ape, the skunk ape, is a primal cryptid alleged to live in the Sunshine State. It's supposed to emit a foul odor similar to that of Bigfoot, indicating a possible defense mechanism some scientists propose. If this was a human, it would have been very emaciated. 2 years ago, a man in White Springs, Florida, said he's seen a family of Bigfoots. In 2013, a man and his son said they were driving in Florida when they stopped when a strange animal went running across a field. There's some kind of YouTube video about it.
Oh, really?
And in 2000, two photographs were purported creature were mailed to Sarasota County, Florida Sheriff's Department. The message included in the mailed envelope to explain that the eyewitnesses had taken the picture in her own backyard. She claimed the animal was attracted to the apples in her tree. Bum, 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 bum.
A skinny Bigfoot. And Steve Ward mentioned in his speech about the skinny Bigfoots.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never heard of them before until then.
Yeah, interesting.
So I do know that in Japan, they have 8 species of Bigfoots, and they all have different names. And I'm not going to mention what they are because I don't remember. But
that'll be another show.
Yeah, I didn't know you had the story about that. That's interesting.
Yeah, so it ties right into our very special guest that we...
Very, very, very blown away that...
He would even come on our show. We're so excited.
I was so honored. You know, I mean,
we're starstruck. That's a good word for it.
But Ken is an awesome dude.
Yeah,
he is so cool.
At the 2018 Ohio Bigfoot Conference, we got to speak with Ken Gerhardt, who is a cryptozoologist. He is also, written some books and travels around and speaks on the different cryptos, Bigfoot. I think we talked to him a little bit about Thunderbirds.
Yeah.
Was it? Yeah. So very interesting interview. So you guys take a listen, and we will talk to you as soon as the interview is over.
All right. We'll be back.
And coming to you for the 2018 Ohio Bigfoot Conference in Salt Fork Lake State Park, Cambridge, Ohio. It's the 222 Paranormal Podcast, and today we have a very, very, very special guest. We are so excited that Ken Gerhardt's here with us here today. Hello, thank you for stopping by.
Hey, guys. It's definitely an honor to be here.
Thank you.
It's amazing. We saw you, and we had to stalk you earlier. We're like, we have to get Ken on the show. You're our hero.
We had a chance. The first time we've heard you speak was in 2016 in Defiance, Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
At the Dogman Symposium.
Yeah. When we heard your speech there, we were like amazed, and we had to get you on. So,
well, thank you. I appreciate everyone that came out and supported that event. That was really cool.
Yeah, we'd love to do something like that again. So for all our listeners, Ken is an international playboy. No, I'm just kidding. He's a world traveler, and he chases all things cryptozoology, Bigfoot,
Thunderbirds, lake monsters, Mothman, werewolves.
You're exciting me now.
Black cats.
Yes.
Big black cats.
You know, we've had so many reports of all of those type of things right here in Ohio.
Sure.
And where are you from, Ken? Where do you originate from?
I'm currently in San Antonio, Texas.
Okay.
Been there for about 12 years. But prior to that, I was in Houston and... Mm-hmm. Born and raised in Michigan, Minnesota.
Oh, okay, great. So he's a Midwest.
Yeah, you hear when I said Minnesota.
I heard it. I heard it. Love the accent. But you know, it's interesting that here in Ohio, there's such a great love and passion for all things cryptid, Dogman,
sure.
Bigfoot. All the good stuff. Paranormal.
Loveland Frogman.
Yes, the Frogman.
I get a lot of
I get a lot of pterodactyl reports from up here too.
Really?
So interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have such a variety.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about some of the things that you like. I mean, what do you prefer? You like going out in the field? Do you like, writing? Do you doing all that fun, exciting stuff?
I love it all. It's kind of like you're kind of asking me to choose my favorite child,
sorry.
Which I guess some people can do. I love it all. I just love to learn and explore. Mm-hmm. My mother she was a huge influence, and she instilled this great sense of discovery and exploration and just the quest for knowledge. And I love to read, and I love to go out in the woods and hike around and look for things. So.
Now, did you normally do that by yourself, or you go with people? Are you just kind of a loner on that, or would you rather go with a group?
Kind of both.
Okay.
It just depends on the situation, but I feel very blessed to have, good working relationships with a lot of other outstanding researchers, mm-hmm. and sometimes we'll join forces and collaborate and go to investigate different things. Sometimes if it's just kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing, I'll just strike out by myself, so... Mm-hmm.
What was the first encounter that you've had that really propelled you to dig deeper into this?
Well, I haven't had a lot of encounters,
okay.
quote unquote, but I always tell the story of 2005. I was up in a place called Little Cottonwood Lake in North Texas, very close to the Oklahoma border, working with some other researchers, and we went to this very remote little lake because there were sightings of a Bigfoot type creature. And right after the sun went down, we were hiking around the lake, and we heard something grunting at us from the brush. It was very loud, very aggressive sounding, and to me, it definitely bore the trademarks of a primate.
Okay.
Primate sounds are very distinctive, mm-hmm. and I've heard primates in the wild, howler monkeys and things, so it sounded like a huge ape, really. We were all pretty freaked out. We never saw it because it was deep in the brush.
Okay.
But... a bunch of stuff happened that night, eye shine and howls and different things. And finally, when we made our way through the brush the following morning to where we had heard this thing, there was a beach with some footprints, and we found a bunch of mutilated turtle shells that had been ripped in half, literally like torn top to bottom in half,
oh
like a piece
gosh.
Of paper. Jeez. And so all of that stuff together, kind of the synthesis of all those things kind of convinced me that that something happened, and that was kind of the closest I think I've been to a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch.
Okay.
Yeah, that I was already kind of all in at that point, but that kind of, you know, gave me even more motivation to become more active and stuff.
Yeah. It's the drive to find out more information about what they are that keeps us going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and because you don't know. And there's some people that say that they never want to find them because then they'll know and the drive will be gone. But I feel that if they do find it, it will propel them to find out more, to learn more. Mm-hmm. And it's weird with all the cryptids are that way. We talk about the Mothman, which is so interesting to me because of all the lore around it. It makes you wonder, is it a physical being? Is it,
something I don't paranormal?
Something paranormal. But because we still haven't found one.
Mm-hmm.
So you've traveled all over the world, correct?
I've been very blessed. I've traveled to 26 different countries.
Oh, my goodness.
I've been on every continent except Antarctica. So.
Okay. What is the most memorable place that you've been to?
Well, Loch Ness was, you know, I was only 15 years old, and that was kind of my first attempt at field research. But, I mean, it's, you know, it's a beautiful lake, and you've got the kind of the mist-shrouded rolling green hills and ancient medieval ruins of castles, and, you know, it just has that kind of, you know, like
keep
you're
talking.
Yeah. It's kind of got that medieval Lord of the Rings kind of feel. Yeah. So that was pretty cool. I love the jungle. I've been to the Amazon. I've done a lot of research in Central American jungle. So I love that whole really dense, you know, kind of Indiana Jones atmosphere when you're trekking through the jungle and encountering things, Maya ruins and things. And Australia is a beautiful country. I really enjoyed my time there as well. Yeah. So it's hard. Again, it's hard to choose.
Yeah. Like you said about the, you know, choosing about two children. Have you, you ever see any big spiders on your on your travels?
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm, like, freaked out about spiders.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me tell you some stories then.
Okay.
Yeah, my sister's really freaked out by spiders.
I noticed, you know, you have one on your chest.
And we were, yeah, I do, don't I? You should love spiders. They're really cool. But we were camping in the Amazon jungle, and, you know, we had a big kind of like a tent. And, you know, you could, at night, you could see the silhouette of giant tarantulas like crawling over the top of the roof, and she was hiding under the covers and, you know, just freaking out. And I thought it was cool. We were at Machu Picchu, you know, up in the mountains of the Andes, and we were sitting at dinner in a hotel, and a tarantula ran up the curtain right behind us, and a guy ran out with a long stick and skewered it and ran off. And and, you know, in my new book, A Menagerie of Mysterious Beasts, I have an account of a alleged cat-sized spider in just outside of Atlanta, Georgia, of all places.
Oh, really? Oh my goodness!
I interviewed this gentleman. He's a fireman and an emergency responder. Seemed like a really sincere, credible guy that had no interest in anything weird or unexplained. But he saw this giant spider and didn't know who else to reach out to. And
oh my.
So, yeah, that's a real mystery. You wouldn't expect. I mean, in the Amazon, there's some pretty big spiders, Goliath, bird eaters and stuff. But he said the spider was like as big as a dinner plate running up his tree in his backyard. So,
oh, my God, I'd have a heart attack. But, you know, traveling all over, you know, there's so many different things out there, you know, paranormal and not paranormal. Mm-hmm. So you're in the jungle. You're in Australia. You've probably seen things that you've never seen before. Buckwise, how do you keep yourself safe, though? Like, do you have guides that go with you? It's like, don't step on that hole there because you're, you know.
Well, I'm crazy, so I don't really.
I love it.
You know, when I was a kid growing, I grew up in the swampy bottomlands of southern Texas. I would sneak out of my window at night and run around in the woods by myself as a kid. So I'm not really uncomfortable in the woods or anything. But, yeah, and you know, all joking aside, you really have to be a little bit reckless and careless to just, you know, do what we do sometimes. But, you know, I'm smart about it. If I'm, you know, in the woods in Texas, you know, in an area where I'm permitted, sometimes I carry a shotgun, you know, just mainly for things like snakes and pigs and things that can be very aggressive. When I travel to Central America and do an expedition Belize, you know, I hired like an expert Maya jungle guide who lived in the jungle all his life with a machete. And so you have someone like that in front of you, and it gives you a lot of confidence this guy's going to know. So, you know, every situation's a little bit different, I guess. But, you know, you have to respect nature at all times. You know, it's nothing to be trifled with. But, you know, at the same time, and I've told a lot of people this weekend, people that have talked about Bigfoot and kind of a fearful way. And the way I see it, humans are the scariest thing on the planet. Yes. And yes. we are the most dangerous animals and dangerous thing in the woods. And if you have that attitude when you go out there in the woods, you know, most other animals will sense that and flee. You know, yeah. So
that's one thing when we talk about people with our ghost hunting stuff, we always say the most dangerous things you're going to encounter are living.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Sure.
So you have to be very wary when you're going into abandoned and haunted places.
Yeah. So like some crazy homeless guy or something. Yeah. Yeah. Got you. Drug addicts or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. So you had mentioned your book. How many books do you have, Ken Gearhart?
I have 3.5. Ooh. And I say that because I co-authored a book with my good friend Nick Redfern. Mm-hmm. But I've written 4.
Tell us a little bit about your books.
My first book is called Big Bird, Modern Sightings of Flying Monsters, wrote in 2007, and it's basically, it covers accounts of what are known as thunderbirds, mm-hmm. which are giant winged creatures, animals that are referred to in Native American folklore, but there are many modern sightings. I've interviewed dozens of credible people that have seen these things. And when I say big, I'm talking about wingspans from like 12 to 20 feet across.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Which is much larger than anything known. My second book is called Monsters of Texas. That's with Nick. We both live in Texas, and we cover everything from Bigfoot in Texas to the Chupacabra to...
It's our favorite word, by the way.
It's a good one. You want to say it again?
Yes.
Chupacabra.
There you go.
To something known as the Lake Worth Goat Man and lake monsters and all kinds of stuff. And then my third book is Encounters with Flying Humanoids, Mothman, Man-Birds, Gargoyles, and Other Winged Beasts. And, of course, that's about flying humanoids like the infamous Mothman. And my new book is called A Menagerie of Mysterious Beasts, and it covers a wide range of things that I've investigated around the world and also contains a number of never-before-published eyewitness accounts.
Okay. Wow.
I feel very fortunate and blessed that when you're on television and you have a high profile, a lot of people will reach out to you and get in touch.
Yeah.
And of course, like you guys do, sometimes I get the, quote-unquote crazies. Hopefully I'm not offending anyone out there, but people that are just, way out there. But, there are also people that are very sincere that have had experiences that they just can't explain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, it's almost therapeutic for them, I sense, to have someone that they can talk to mm-hmm. say, no one in my family believes me, why my wife doesn't believe me, but... this is what happened to me, and I can kind of give them that kind of a little sense of closure or reassurance by saying, I've interviewed other people that have seen mm-hmm. that same thing, and that must be very reassuring to them. So,
going back to your first book, Thunderbirds, is there a certain area that is more common for them to be seen in, or is this like just North America, like all over North America, or is it more like desert or warm climates?
That's a good question. I have a giant map on my wall in my apartment, and I've pinpointed all of the sightings. And you can actually see some pretty strong groupings and clusters. Mm-hmm. But moreover, you can see some almost like migration patterns that go from like north to south.
Okay.
And there are some vast, wide open areas where you have no sightings. So it is very compelling because it shows patterns that you would expect from a living animal.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of Thunderbird reports come from, believe it or not, Illinois has a number of sightings,
okay.
South Central Illinois and somewhat up to the north. My home state of Texas has a number, and particularly in the southern part of the state and where I live in San Antonio. And then North Central Pennsylvania, the Susquehanna River Valley and the Black Forest mm-hmm. area traditionally produces a number of reports. Beyond that, you get reports from Ohio, Kentucky, some in the Southwest, as you said, California, Arizona.
I just wondered if there's any, have they found any nesting? Any type of large nesting?
No,
or do you think it's more like a cave that they live in, or?
That's interesting. There really is no physical evidence. That's all Native American legends mm-hmm. and modern accounts, eyewitness accounts. No one has, as of yet, to my knowledge, found a giant feather or a giant egg shell or a nest or even a giant pile of bird crap on their car. So it's a real mystery.
Yeah.
Unlike Bigfoot, where we actually do have some castings of footprints mm-hmm. and some hair samples and things like that.
Yeah.
So it is. And, in the minds of most scientists, it's really hard to make a case for something like a giant bird because you think, well, people are going to be seeing those all the time, and they are going to be leaving behind physical traces. So, I don't know. It's an enigma. But
do you feel, and I don't know if I want to say migration patterns, but do you notice with those sightings, other cryptid type sightings, almost like traveling with them or something like that, where you get the same layover of the maps?
Well, what's interesting is that I get three general types of flying cryptid sightings.
Okay.
You have what we call the thunderbirds, which are traditionally feathered, okay, large, dark, feathered birds that people say look like eagles or vultures, but with just an enormous, mm-hmm, much, much bigger than any known species. Then you have a second type, which people describe as very prehistoric, typically describe as having leathery, bat-like wings, and basically sound like pterosaurs, which, mm-hmm, are flying reptiles that went extinct 65 million years ago. And then the third type are like the flying humanoids, like Mothman-type creatures, okay, like things that have humanoid characteristics with wings. What's interesting about those three types is that on my flying cryptid map, which I said I have tacks, but they're color-coded with those three types, they overlap.
Okay.
So you, in those clustered areas, thinking, you have all three types. So it makes you wonder if it's a matter of interpretation, if people are, mm-hmm, seeing one type and interpreting it different ways. Well, it looked more prehistoric, or, you know, I think it was a bird. You know, there's a lot of ambiguity. For example, speaking about pterosaurs, which we don't know much about, we're learning from fossils, but, mm-hmm, paleontologists are starting to piece that together. But, you know, some of them looked very bird-like. They didn't have anything on their wings were like membranous, like bats, mm-hmm, but their bodies actually had not feathers, but kind of a fur-like covering called pycnofibers, which, okay, were like proto-feathers.
Mm-hmm.
So they looked fuzzy and furry.
Okay.
And, of course, they had beaks, even though a lot of them had teeth. Not all of them. Some of them had teeth. So they may have looked very bird-like in some ways. So, you know, just speculating, but, you know,
mm-hmm,
maybe you have something like that, or maybe there are birds that look very prehistoric.
Sure.
Or maybe there are birds that would have some type of humanoid characteristic. That's hard to kind of explain, but... Mm-hmm.
And sightings of these have been going on for thousands of years. So, you know, a lot of people say, like with Bigfoot and that, well, people are just seeing things, it's made up. It's like, I don't see that this is actually made up, because
we have historical documents.
Historical documents, even cave drawings and Indian folklore and stuff. So, mm-hmm, there's got to be something out there that we just haven't found yet. You know?
Well, we draw on, in cryptozoology, we draw a lot on Native American, or I mean, I guess I should say global folklore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big component of our research, because, you know, make some examples. You know, things like the Komodo dragon,
mm-hmm,
the okapi, the giant squid,
mm-hmm,
the mountain gorilla, the giant panda. These were all considered legends,
yeah,
you know, by Western scientists until they actually did capture them or find physical evidence. So a lot of animal discoveries are quote-unquote legends. And so, you know, you're looking at different folklore. I mean, indigenous peoples in different lands, they know what animals that they see on a regular,
yeah,
basis. Whether or not Western scientists or Western culture accepts that and says, oh, these people are just superstitious and they're making something, mm-hmm, up, or accepts the reality of, oh, wow, maybe they know about something we don't know. The other thing is, of course, I always like to point out that there are 5,000 new species documented every year. I mean, most of those are very small things like mollusks and,
yeah,
invertebrates, insects. But, you know, every once in a while something very large turns up, mm-hmm, you know, particularly in like the oceans and stuff,
yeah,
you know, new things are being found. So discovery is never ending. There are new things being found all the time. And so therefore, the possibility is there that other things like Bigfoot could be out there,
yeah,
as well.
And people say that, well, those went extinct millions of years ago, but then you come up with the coelacanth.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it's a good example.
Exactly.
It's a physical thing that people have found.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good. It's called a Lazarus taxon. When there's an animal that is, we only know from the fossil history, we assumed it's extinct, pardon me,
mm-hmm,
and then we find one live and kicking or,
yeah,
swimming, and there it is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And what's next for you?
Well, now you back me in a corner, because there's something I really want to talk about.
Do it.
But, okay, so I am currently... co-producing a series. It's not on a television network, so we're going to try to, you know, sell it to Netflix, Amazon, whoever is willing to broadcast it, put it out there.
Okay.
But it is, it's with a good friend and colleague, another serious researcher. And what we're really proud of, we're doing it all ourselves, but the production value is like a TV show.
Okay.
We have real TV cameramen, editors, and high, you know, graphics, CGI, all that. So it looks like a regular TV show, but it's being produced by us. and we're going to investigate a variety of different cryptids and mystery animals. And the thing I love about it is it's 100% completely unscripted, authentic, genuine, real.
That's nice.
This is two guys that go out and investigate. We find real witnesses or are contacted by witnesses. We interview them. We look at the evidence. We look at the habitat and just discuss. And we're hoping that a lot of people will, you know, find that kind of refreshing in this day and age of kind of overly dramatic.
I was thinking, you know, when you were talking that, I was thinking the same thing. It's like, that is so great because it's down to earth.
Yeah.
And it shows people what it's truly like.
Now, is that global or just in North America?
So right now, it's just in America because we're on, you know, we're limited by our budget. But, you know, maybe we'll go global someday. But that's been my main project. We've got two episodes kind of in the can. And my partner doesn't really want me to talk about it until we have, like, at least a first season done, which is going to be a few more episodes.
Yeah. That's cool. Great. I'm so excited for you.
Thank you so
much.
That's
amazing. Tell everybody where they can get your book if they want to get a copy of your book.
All my books are available, of course, on Amazon. My two latest books are available at most Barnes & Noble locations, or you can order them from a Barnes & Noble. And, of course, if people want to reach out to me, if they've had an experience, a sighting, if they have a question or anything, of course, I'm on Facebook. Ken Gerhard Cryptozoologist is my fan page. And I also have a website, kengerhard.com, though admittedly I haven't been – something's going on and I haven't been getting all my messages through there. So people might want to contact me on Facebook.
Okay.
And the best way to get your book is to come to an event and speak to a person.
Yes, come visit, meet everybody. What do you like most doing about conventions? What do you like it?
Well, this is a huge honor because this is the longest running Bigfoot convention in the world, you know, over 20 years. I've come here before, you know, just to show my support, enjoy the camaraderie with other researchers, a lot of really wonderful people, but it's a tremendous honor to be a speaker this year. I've always wanted to speak at this event, so I was really thrilled when Mark finally asked me to. But, you know, I don't do a ton of these. I do a few events a year, and but it's just, you know, the stories, the people sharing their experiences, other researchers that have, you know, have findings or photographs or, you know, whatever that they want to share with you. You know, and just that feeling of unity that you have, you know, kindred spirits and people that have similar interests and open minds.
Yeah, great. Well, we appreciate you coming all the way to Ohio to visit.
Love Ohio.
I love.
It's fabulous.
Yes, you'll have to come back.
Okay, sounds good.
Any other questions?
Oh, no.
I'll be at the Mothman Festival.
Yes.
I'll be a speaker this year. If anyone's in the area, that's a 10,000 people. That's a tremendous event as well.
We'll be there.
Sounds good.
Now that you brought that up, it makes me think, not to be out of line or that, but what do you think of the recent sightings in Chicago of the Mothman?
I've spoken to dozens of people that have claimed to have had experiences and sightings of flying humanoid creatures. So, I certainly believe there's something to the phenomenon. The primary investigator in that case is Lon Strickler, who's been very gracious in forwarding all the accounts onto me. Lon is a pretty legit researcher investigator. That said, he is, as far as I know, the only source of the sightings and reports.
Okay.
So, I mean, not you know, and again, not to question his legitimacy, but, you know, you would like to hear, you know, I would personally like to interview some of those people just to get more details.
Yeah.
Some of the reports are a little bit ambiguous and... But, you know, but I certainly think there could be something to it. There's a pattern insofar as these things do tend to happen in clusters in certain locations. So, I mean, it does fit the profile in terms of a number of sightings in a short period of time in one general location. And because I don't view these Mothman or these flying humanoids as flesh and blood animals, creatures or whatever, I think it's more of a metaphysical happening,
a
manifestation, a projection of some kind. That would also make sense that these things are, you know, basically clustered together.
Okay.
But are the sightings rare? I mean, because some of the sightings were like downtown, right? Chicago.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it rare to have sightings in like the metropolis area versus, you know, being out here in the woods?
It's a little bit unusual, but I guess that was the point that I didn't finish. So thank you. It's like, you know, it's not that weird having them in an urban area if it's a metaphysical phenomenon as opposed to an animal. But we had something in Houston, Texas, where I lived for a while, called the Houston Batman, which was sighted very close to downtown.
Oh, interesting.
And there's a guy I interviewed recently in Ontario that I've been talking to that claims that he saw a 12-foot-tall flying humanoid land in the middle of rush hour on the side of the freeway. And he thought that everyone saw it. But when he got home and turned on the news channel, he said it wasn't on the news. So he's, you know, unless other people haven't come forward. But, you know, these things appear at the time and place of their choosing.
All right. Well, like I said, thank you. It's an honor to speak with you. And hopefully we talk to you again. And we see you again at many of the conferences.
Yes. And everybody go out and buy Ken's book.
Right now.
Thanks again for having me on.
Yes, appreciate it.
Take care.
Thank you.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm just so honored. So honored that he stopped by.
He was so cool.
He was.
I hope we meet him again.
We will.
Ken, we're going to meet again. I'll try not to stalk you this time. Just kidding.
We saw him there, I went over earlier and asked him if he wanted to stop by the booth. And his booth was just so full of people all day long that I didn't think we were going to be able to talk to him.
Yeah, he was swamped all day. He was definitely, you know, busy signing autographs and talking to people and all that. Really, really cool things that he does. He's a great public speaker. If you guys ever get to listen to one of his at a conference, you know, some of his
I still
talks.
Remember the dog man when we sat there, because that was our first convention we ever went to, and we just went as guests. We didn't even have the show yet.
No, we just were interested, and we went to the, you know, conference. It was in Defiance, Ohio.
Yeah.
At this little VFW post down in the basement. I think there was, maybe 20 people there.
Yeah, more than that, but it was cool.
Yeah.
They had vendors and everything. We were like, we could do this.
Yeah, we totally could do that. But, you know, he just has such a wealth of knowledge of you know, the cryptids and it's just fascinating. I could sit and listen to him all day.
Yeah.
You know.
And I definitely want to get him on again when he has time, you know.
Yeah, we'll run into him on another show. But another show, another conference.
Yeah, and as we mentioned last week on the show, we really would like you guys, if you're within a 30-hour drive of Toledo, come down to Bowling Green, Ohio, July 22nd. I know we mentioned it before, but we're going to be at the Old South Main School, a very haunted location. Come on out. It's a great place. It's a fundraiser for our show and for the school. They, Don and Kelly from Fringe Paranormal and Toledo, Haunted Toledo.
Chris and Sarah from Haunted Toledo.
Yeah, go ahead and say
that. Okay. And also Chris and Sarah from Haunted Toledo are sponsoring us. Mm-hmm. We're, you know, just really, really grateful that they're putting this event on for us. Because
when he first brought it up, I was kind of confused. I'm like, wait, you want to do a fundraiser? I'm like, yeah, we're in. And he's like, no, we want to do it for you guys and the... Oh, I'm like, oh, okay.
So awesome.
We're going to put in as much effort as we can to make it a great event. And it's free to get in, but they are asking for donations. So please bring a donation of what? 20, 30 grand?
Yeah. I need some lipo. Yeah. We're just joking. No, but come out. Let's hang out. Let's talk ghost stuff. Let's walk around a haunted location.
Yeah. I'm going to have the coffin-shaped cornhole boards out front, so come out, play a game with me.
Welcome to bring your ghost hunting equipment. It will be during the day.
Yeah,
so,
and there'll be a lot of people there, but still.
It might stir up some activity having all the people in the building.
The Collingwood when we went.
Well, you know, it's a school, so, you know, when it was an active school, there's full of people.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Maybe this will be a human trigger object.
You never know. But there's going to be a lot of people from the paranormal world, but you can come out and talk to Haunted Toledo. You can talk to Fringe Paranormal. You can talk to us.
Yeah, even if you're just interested in seeing an old historic site, you know, and how they are preserving this for future generations.
And it's neat because, like, in the attic, a lot of the students came back and signed the wall. So you can go up in the attic and look at all the signatures. And there'll be a lot of people that
went to that school at the open house.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It'll be like a class reunion and a paranormal convention and a meet and greet all in one.
Yeah. So, hope you enjoyed the interview. I really did.
Yep. So go to our website. We're going to post some of Ken's information there if you want to buy his book. And thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
See you later.
Bye.
You and I try to find our minds, then remove them.